Andrew Carnegie's experiments with producing steel paid off, and in its first year, 1875, the Edgar Thomson Steelworks, with its Bessemer converters, produced 2,000 steel rails for the Pennsylvania Railroad. In its first 5 years, it became the most productive and profitable steel mill in the world. It's still in operation today, owned by U.S. Steel. The success of the Thomson Steel Mill was largely due to Carnegie Superintendent William Jones, known as Captain Bill Jones, for his service in the war. He was an inventor and had more than 50 patents for improvements to making steel, and engineered hundreds of innovations to Carnegie's mills. Jones was not only in charge of the mill's technology, but also its labor force. He was fair and a motivator and a skilled negotiator with the unions at the mill. He convinced Andrew Carnegie to institute 8-hour shifts rather than the 12-hour shifts that were in practice around the country. He increased salaries and improved conditions to lessen accidents, to share profits with managers to instill productivity. Carnegie respected Jones to such a degree that he offered to make him a partner, which Jones turned down. He preferred tinkering with his innovations. He did ask for a salary of $25,000, though, which Carnegie paid. That was the same salary as the President of the United States at the time. They saw eye to eye when it came to labor versus management, and Carnegie saw in Jones someone who could actually put into practice his ideas of how labor, union, and management should cooperate. For more than 10 years, they worked together until Jones was killed in an explosion. More than 1,000 people would attend his funeral, and Carnegie kept a photo of him at his home for the rest of his life. This was a chaotic time in the United States regarding the development of unions. As industry grew across the country, so did the demand for improved working condition and better wages. The cry was, how can we have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness if we are chained in dirty conditions for 12 hours a day? New socialists were calling for the abolishment of capitalism if every man is to have an equal share. Beginning as early as the mid-1870s in the United States, there were many disputes and strikes and sometimes riots, such as the Great Rail Strike of 1877, in which more than 100 people died. Machinery was continuously evolving and creating new jobs and eliminating others. There were divisions now growing between skilled and unskilled labor, and for millions of immigrants, there was often no representation at all. After the 1886 Haymarket riot in Chicago, in which during a peaceful labor demonstration, someone threw a bomb into the crowd where people were killed, setting off a riot, Andrew Carnegie wrote the first of two essays with his ideas of how labor and management should coincide. He was sympathetic to trade unions and felt that it was the right of every man to be a member of a union, and he felt that the unions were beneficial to both labor and capital. But he also felt that the entire process was evolving and not fully developed, and that some unions could actually become a detriment if they became political or made such demands that would lead to the ruin of a business. He described a sliding scale, that when a business's profits went up, the employee's salary should go up, and when profits went down, so should the salaries. He felt that arbitration was central and crucial, and if a company shut down because of the disputes, it should remain closed until an agreement was reached. He stated, "No man shall take another man's job." He was praised and condemned. For labor, he was the hero of the working man, while those on the other side would say, "Why can't he keep his mouth shut?" During 3 disputes at his mills, Andrew Carnegie put his words into practice and successfully negotiated new contracts, one actually at Homestead in 1889. Below, I've tried to summarize the Homestead strike of 1892. The more I read, the more complicated it became. Andrew Carnegie's general manager, Henry Clay Frick, oversaw the negotiations while Carnegie was in Scotland. Carnegie was in constant communication with Frick, and Frick had an uncompromising stand against the union. Andrew knew this and wanted to see how far it would go. Frick made his offer, and that was it. The press covered it all over the world, partly because it was one of the most important steel mills in the United States, with one of the most important steel unions, and also because the mill was owned by the hero of the working man. It was a disaster, bungled on both sides from the very beginning. Andrew Carnegie was condemned as a ruthless hypocrite. From all I have read about him, I can't help but think if he had actually been there and not in Scotland, and hearing out both sides of the dispute, as he had in the other three negotiations, that things might have gone very differently.